Hello, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Steven Sadak.
And Justin Case.
And we hate movies. Hello, everyone. Welcome to We Hate Movies. Thank you for tuning in, as always. If you're tuning in for the first time, welcome to the show. Thanks for checking us out. I realized we were getting a lot of new listeners and, you know, figured I'd welcome them eventually. Also, by the way, if you've been listening for months and haven't been welcomed yet, welcome to the program.
I just imagine some guy be like, thank you, finally.
Fucking finally. Today, we are wrapping up our summer blockbuster extravaganza. It's been quite a ride, quite a slog, I'll say. We're joined, of course, today by friend of the show and private cabin partner of ours, Justin J. Case. Hello, sir.
Hey, how are you? How are you?
Good, good. Pleasure to have you back, first of all.
I know. I'm back for another disaster.
Yeah, that's right. You are a disaster movie aficionado.
Resident disaster movie expert, Justin J. Case.
Sure.
Now everybody thinks you have a ponytail, but you don't have a ponytail. Just to point out, none of us have ever had ponytails.
Some of us have. None of us have ever had ponytails.
Justin is here today because we thought we would do a little bit of plugging for our sketch comedy side of our whole endeavor here. Private Cabin had a video up on crack.com, something we partnered with them with. Justin, if you want to talk about that real quick.
Yeah, absolutely. We got mixed up with those folks of Cracked Magazine. Something that I enjoyed when I was a child, and they tapped us to make a themed video that's going to come out on the 17th of this month, 3 days before something that else is going to come out. I imagine that most people will see our video about Batman more than we'll see the actual film.
I think by now people have seen the video more than they've seen Batman.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be neck and neck, but we're probably going to beat The Dark Knight in viewership.
But yeah, so it was pretty cool. We got to work with crack.com. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't seen the video yet, you can head over to crack.com.
I think it's called Gotham Gangster.
Yeah, yeah. In full disclosure to our audience, as we record this, it's not out yet, so we don't know what they decided to call it. We were just kind of hired hands on this thing. They wrote it and everything. We just sort of produced it and acted in it and all that good stuff. Features the great Will Hines from the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. It was really cool to work with him. So if you haven't checked it out, go to crack.com, search Batman or maybe Gotham Gangster, whatever they decided to call it. I'm sure it's featured somewhere on that website.
And if you haven't yet, check out Private Cabin on Facebook. Like Private Cabin on Facebook. We've got a ton of videos there. And on funnyordie.com.
Totally. We're also on Twitter at Private Cabin as well. All right, gentlemen. 1996, Jan de Bond brought the world Twister. 4 years before The Haunting, Twister.
It's a sad. It's like, because the poster is cool, right? It's like,
it's a pretty cool poster. There's actually,
two. Yeah. Everything's like sepia, and it's two people who are Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt running from a Twister. It's like from the director of Speed and the creator of Jurassic Park, Twister.
You got me.
What else do I need to go pay $4.75 at a matinee show in 1996?
Yeah. Which I did. Yeah, I mean, like, the only person from Jurassic Park that hasn't really wore out the tread on those tires and, like, still has credibility, it's Steven Spielberg. Everybody else has really taken that name in the dirt.
Yeah. Well, also, though, Spielberg had his fingers in this pie. Amblin's all over it. He produced it. So he doesn't have entirely clean hands in this whole thing.
No, that's true.
So I remember seeing it, like, this was the movie, at least for me, and I'm a little older, but this is the first big movie of my high school life.
Uh-huh.
So this is like maybe heading into high school. And I mean, and this was just it. There's this movie as the biggest thing, and then cut to, what's the next biggest thing that's ever happened? Avatar? I don't know. That's all. It's a time shift.
That's a 20-year gap, practically.
Your movie-going career like just went into a bear-esque hibernation.
I saw Sleepers in there for some reason.
Everybody saw Sleepers.
On a date.
Unfortunately, everybody saw this movie. It brings to mind the thing that we, I think, kind of actually discussed when you were here with Deep Impact, Justin. But the idea of this, like, mid to late 90s obsession with, like, natural disasters and weather is the bad guy. The world's not so much ending in this movie, but it's that whole idea of, like, human beings going up against nature and they're going to win somehow, even though in this movie, it's fucking impossible to win anything. If you get out alive, I guess you won.
Well, no, that's the thing is, I mean, like, with Deep Impact, you know, it's a big meteor coming towards the world that's going to destroy the world. You send up a spaceship, you take care of that meteorite. This is a natural occurrence that happens every year and, you know, millions and millions of dollars worth of damage. And at the end of the movie, they haven't thwarted it. They don't win.
Well, that's the thing. There's a line in this movie about an old woman says to Helen Hunt, "Only you can stop this tornado," in so many words. And it's like, well, no, she can't. There's actually no one this side of God that can stop a fucking tornado because it's a fucking natural occurrence. Like, what are you talking about?
I didn't remember because I had seen it so long ago. I could not remember before I watched it. For the life of me, what I thought. I thought they were like, their tornadoes are going to happen. We're going to know how they happen, just for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And then it does explain that they want to increase the warning systems.
Right.
Right. So from now it's 3 minutes, a measly 3 minutes, which in practicality means nothing. But they say there's a 3 minute warning system, which is not a warning. And they wanted to get it to 15. I don't know why 15 is their goal.
I mean, because that's a good chunk of time. You got a quarter of an hour.
Would be an hour, like, or 2 hours.
Yeah. They didn't have very lofty goals, though, did they?
Well, they're scientists. They're not magicians. Come on, 2 hours? That's ridiculous.
It'd be cool if this movie was like called Twister Killers, and they all had like packs that could suck
like Ghostbusters.
Yeah, that they could suck up twisters in. I mean, like, set it in the near future, and then they could stop that fucking tornado.
Well, let me tell you something, okay? This movie was written by Michael Crichton and his wife. The guy who fucking posited that you could make dinosaurs come back to life,
yeah,
and fucking aliens were in a gigantic ball at the bottom of the ocean. You're telling me this guy didn't bother to write in a draft where, like, they sent a big thing up and it exploded and someone had the line, "Well, the mass of the explosion and the velocity of the wind just broke that twister right in half and we killed it." Twister killers.
It'd be great if they, like, found the Greek god Spyrios, who creates all the twisters, and then, like, you know, they kill him.
They just fucking put, like, Titan's trident through his heart. Am I mixing up Romans and Greeks? What's going on there?
Well, Spyrios is a fake god anyway, so that's...
That's just from Steve's fan fiction.
My Greek god fan fiction. My Hercules the Disney movie fan fiction that I do.
The original name for Spyrios was Stevios.
Universe according to Steve.
Or maybe the Mega Man villain. There was a Mega Man villain that did tornadoes, right?
Yeah, Tornado Man.
Well, maybe it's Tornado Man in a house somewhere.
Those Japanese didn't get too creative with those names, or I guess the English translators didn't get too creative with those names.
No, they played it pretty straight.
Every time a new one would come out, I'd be like, "You're way out of elements. There's no more elements for you to make bad guys out of," and they just would find it.
Or there's no more synonyms for fire because it was like Heat Man, mm-hmm, Fire Man, Flame Man.
All of them were based on sharp. There was Cutter Man, Slice Man, Blade Man.
Yeah,
they were so out of ideas, man. There's a fucking Top Man at one point. It's a guy that throws dreidels at you.
It's Rodget's Mega Man. Everything's a synonym.
So this flick is Bill Paxton is a guy who's an extreme tornado hunter.
He's the extreme.
You're right. His nickname is so extreme. It's the extreme. Capital E.
Why did they call them the extreme? Somebody asks. And then they go, because he's extreme.
Sweet nickname, by the way. It's about as clever as Fatso. So it's him. And then Helen Hunt is also a storm chaser. And they're recently divorced or some nonsense. Let me tell you, folks, there is a downright gaggle of fucking shiftless losers in this movie that populate this cast. We're talking about Philip Seymour Hoffman's probably the biggest one.
Oh, easily the biggest.
Joey Slotnick from Boston Public is another.
Jeremy Davies plays the cowardly one. Alan Ruck from Ferris Bueller's Day Off is one.
Todd Field before he became a creepy director.
Alan Ruck, by the way, can I just show my fucking nerd flag for a second? Captain John Harriman of the Enterprise B.
Oh yeah, he is. He didn't last long in that Enterprise B, that's for sure.
No.
Also, Todd Field, Jan de Bont's favorite director actor.
Todd, you're gonna go to the hospital. Todd, you're gonna go see if Mary's all right. Todd. The point is, there's a lot of fucking people, and they've all got about two lines apiece, and nobody knows what jobs they have. It's a caravan of people that chase these storms in, like, seven really shitty cars.
Well, it makes sense. Like, all right, Helen Hunt's a scientist. It's a team of scientists. I got that. It doesn't need to be this deep.
It didn't have to be that many people, and not all of them always had to have something tied around their waist.
Whether it's a flannel shirt.
There's so many flannel shirts tied around waists.
And little necklaces and so on and so forth.
All right. So realistically, though, if you put someone down in a chair and you were like, aside from Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt, who out of that team is your favorite? Are you telling me that there's a person who's not going to pick Philip Seymour Hoffman?
The Dustman all the way.
It's the Dustman. Yeah. It has to be. And to his credit, and it's infuriating because this character sucks and it's ridiculous. But to his credit, when you turn that movie off, he's the only one out of that ragtag group of losers you remember.
Well, he's because it's all Dusty, Dustman, Dustmeister, and he's, you know, he's the dude. I remember Belzer!
Yeah, he's yelling at other characters. Yelling other characters' names are more memorable than those actual characters. His catchphrase through the movie, we'll talk about this for a second, he keeps referring to something called the Suck Zone.
The Suck Zone. It's the point. Basically, at which the twister sucks you up.
Which I guess is something to do with the tornado, like the point where you'll be, you know, sucked into it or whatever. He finds all sorts of ways to make this thing sexual, though.
I don't understand. I guess I didn't. I think I would have noticed. Like, the suck zone of a tornado must be everything, including the tornado itself.
Right.
Zone, right?
I mean,
it's not
a
specific point.
Is there a part of a tornado that's not going to suck you into it? Like, is there like a broken part where you're like, no, this is like the neutral zone. You can hang out here. Because it's fucking swirling around. How would you even find it?
The suck zone is the rest stop on Route 9 where there's, there's that hole right there. It's called the suck zone.
They pick Dusty off the street.
Cut to the Henry Winkler character from Arrested Development.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but there's a little prologue to this movie that adds absolutely nothing.
You're right.
It's 1969, and it's a family that gets a pretty decent warning. They've got their 5 minutes,
3 minutes.
Yeah, they get to it, it. It's Helen Hunt. It's like her father and mother and her adorable dog. A lot of good dogs in this movie.
As always, there's good dogs.
And they run to the cellar, and like everybody's holding on to like different points of the cellar. The mother and her are holding on to this like bar down in the cellar that's like totally well deep in there. And the dad, for some reason, like he's fucking Charles Atlas, is holding on to this door. Like, this is what's going to keep my family alive. Me and my wiry frame holding this door shut from the twister.
And unlike Charles Atlas, this guy did not live long enough to do a bunch of drugs and sign $5 autographs at a VFW hall.
No, he did not. After his brief skirmish with the suck zone, he dropped down.
I mean, this guy gets fucking killed. And it's one of those things where it's like, just let go of that door.
Yeah.
That door is not doing shit.
Get deep into be with your family. Put things in front of. There's so many things he could have done than trying to hold that door closed.
That little terrier makes it through, and he's just like, he's not holding on to nothing. He's just well into the cellar.
Well, listen, this is 1969, right? This isn't Michael Shannon in Take Shelter, and there's a big fucking metal-ass door. This is just a rickety piece of wood.
Yeah, right.
That's not stopping the twister from anything. If that twister wants to come a-knocking, it's fucking sucking you out of this thing, door or no door.
Think of it this way. Think of it as if there's no twister up there, but there's a really strong person. You would lose to that strong person, would you not? Therefore, you're not beating the twister.
And that's a force of nature.
Right.
It's not just Tony Atlas trying to beat you up.
Say there's two of us. He's still going to lose.
So, yeah. So then we cut back to
present day.
And so the whole thing is they have this invention of Bill Paxton's that they hilariously called Dorothy.
Oh, wait, never mind.
And it's like, all right, you know, this thing's going to launch a bunch of what appear to be Christmas ornaments. They're like computer sensors. up into the tornado, and we're going to get all sorts of inside baseball velocities and fucking rotation speed and whatever, and who cares. And somehow, this is going to allow them to increase the warning time to 15 minutes.
Which is a big deal.
Finally, by the way.
And the only sort of timetable we're working with, because, right, the whole question throughout this whole movie is, why don't they just stop? Like, things are going really poorly today. Just cut your losses, come back tomorrow.
Well, today is the day is Twister Day in America. For some, like, we right after the prologue, we see the most useless Z plot of this movie is what's going on at the national, what's going on at the National Center, the National Severe Storm Laboratory.
Which might be real. I don't know. Meteorologists out there, is that a real thing? Who
sounds
cares?
Like a bunch of who's a fudge.
Yes.
And, like, we see them and they're like, today is going to have the most twisters ever and it's going to be really, really bad.
And you're like, all right, so I guess that's why they don't just pack it in and call it a day.
But there's so many other twisters. Like, you have four, like, you've made this thing. It's probably expensive. The beginning, they say that they run out of grant money, so you should be hoarding these things. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have much more money to spend on these Dorothys, which are probably expensive.
Oh, they're most definitely expensive. They only have four of them, and half of this movie is just watching these things tip over like a fucking blustery garbage can.
It is a garbage can. It's essentially a garbage can.
It's a garbage can with Christmas ornaments in it, and that's somehow going to save tornado technology.
Why didn't they start with, like, one? Like, just yeah. Get the dustman, like, you know, a little tipsy. Give him one of those Christmas ornaments and get him to go throw it at the tornado.
Yeah,
and see if it picks it up. Because a lot of it was about just them not being able to move the thing. They dumped both of them because right when the tornado is about to hit, they're like, oh, we got to move it. Oh, that's going to be difficult in the tornado. And then they dump it because they can't get it into position.
Well, but a lot of this movie is like, tornadoes are awesome. I love chasing tornadoes. Holy shit, a tornado! Like, it's just,
I mean, it is like all these people in this. I keep calling them a ragtag group of losers because that's what they are.
Mm-hmm.
All of these people are like a bunch of little Dan Cortezes that have fucking science degrees. Okay, it's like they all love extreme sports. Probably there's probably a couple surfers in there. This is like they're like catching a really big wave kind of a thing. And they're all, it's all just fucking gnarlified, and everything is so fucking totally tubular until they get right up to it. And then they're like, oh, holy shit, oh, we were so wrong. This is a horrible thing to do with your life.
There's even one guy who's scared to death of them.
Jeremy Davies' character acts like it's like his first day, like he's the fucking rookie storm chaser.
He like hides underneath the car. He's like, oh, it's okay, come on.
Let me tell you something. In a movie called Twister, if you are the character who pussies out and has to hide in a car, you should die. The fucking body count in this movie is pathetic.
Or, I mean, like, it would be great if Jeremy Davies does a little bit of his Saving Private Ryan thing, and he just is too cowardly to save someone from a twister.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Adam Goldberg is getting stabbed by by a piece of metal, and he's just, like, too terrified.
All right, you're going to be Johnny on the spot with that Dorothy. You're going to be right there.
So when we see Bill Paxton, he is introduced by driving up to these people. They meet up at some base camp or whatever.
Well, he's driving with his new fiance.
Right, his fiance, played by what's-her-face?
Jamie Gertz.
And it's a whole, like, they have to get Helen Hunt to sign these divorce papers, and they're just going to be on their way.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, that never works out the way you want it to.
But it's set up that, like, Helen Hunt has had these things for months and months and months. Like, he's been calling her. He's been faxing her. He's maybe emailed her. I don't know. Maybe not. 96.
You know, he was going to email her, but the hours on his AOL trial disk expired.
Oh, yeah. What, Helen Hunt, she's got an AOL account. What's her AOL name in this movie?
Twister Lady XXOO.
Sidewinder 6969.
Totally Twisted 1234.
It's totally twisted.
Yeah, yes.
Oh, wait, what about my dad was killed by an F5 tornado? 00003.
F5 do or die.
F5 frowny face.
This is 96, man. I don't think emoticons were introduced into the internet lexicon.
You're right. But so, like, she is, like, cliche ex-wife from hell, right? Like, she won't sign the divorce paper. She's clinging to him, and, like, he has to drive. I mean, we don't know where Bill Paxton is based, But he has to go all the way out in the middle of God knows where to find her to be like, sign these fucking papers.
Yeah, they drive out to fucking middle of nowhere. Did you hear that, Oklahoma? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, like, the whole thing is he is retired from storm chasing.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get a job as a meteorologist at a news channel, at a news station type thing, which they all chastise the hell out of him for. They're like, oh, you fucking pussy. What's it like to be a weatherman? I don't know. What is it like to make $100,000 a year, have a nice car, and live in a house with central air conditioning? You fucking asshole ragtag group of losers.
They chastise him for taking the... Like, it's like a desk job, right? You're just like, you know, you're giving it up.
Yeah.
And their whole thing is that they want to help warn people about twisters, dangerous weather that's coming up.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's what a weatherman does. He's going on the TV and warning people. Sometimes they're going to call him late at night and he's got to go and do something. Right?
That's precisely what he does.
Why not work in tandem, right? Like, listen, Bill Paxton, you want to get out of the field. You want to be a fucking desk jockey. That's fine. How about... We'll do all the, you know, the research and the scary stuff, and then when we get this info, you can be the one that passes it out to the masses because you are this soapbox for spreading our word about tornado chasing or something. But no, he's just a fucking pussy, and he's throwing his life away with this floozy.
It's a very small thing, but the movie doesn't quite know if everybody gets their news from TV or radio. They didn't think it through.
No, that's one of the things. That's one of the few things this movie didn't think through all the way to the end.
Well, Z Plot Weather Station could call both a television studio and a radio studio and be like, hey, in 15 minutes, a fucking twister's touching down.
But so, yeah, so he comes over and everyone, like, there's this, like, really dumb. He meets everybody. He meets the Dustman, who is the most extreme of all. He should be called the extreme.
He should be called the extreme. He's way more extreme than Bill Paxton. Also, I'm not sure if we're making it clear. The Dustman is Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
Just so that's clear.
Dusty is Philip Seymour Hoffman. He's looking like Eric Clapton.
And Cream.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, but like badass Eric Clapton and like probably smoking a lot of weed, but they don't show it.
Right, because it's Universal Pictures. They want to make a summer movie, but you know he is fucking smoking so much weed in this movie. He has to be.
He's got one of those like bottles and then a tube that comes down like a gerbil.
Yeah.
Right, but that's like a mojito or something, right?
Yeah, definitely. There's some just relaxed tropical drink in that fucking thing.
Pina colada just coming right down.
Also, though, a lot of diet Pepsi. Yeah. Because for all his extremeness, there's also a lot of hairy Knowles going on in this guy.
He's a fat guy that, like... that appropriates a 2-liter Diet Pepsi like it was a 20-ounce Diet Pepsi. You know what
yes.
I mean? Like, that's his drink for the next 2 hours, and he's just slushing it.
He also probably has a steady hooker that he constantly calls when he's home, and they're kind of friends at this point. That's the Dustman. And that's, by the way, more characterization we just pulled out of our asses than this movie bothers to fucking give at all.
That gives to... all of the other characters combined, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just don't know what the point... Like, you could condense all these people into, like, a team of 4 or 5 people. You know what I mean? Like, you want to keep your Dusty because he's your comic relief. He's, you know, he's the one that's fat. You know, he's most unlike everyone else.
He's the one that will rescue you from the fucking monotony of this movie.
But the rest of them are all, like, wiry actors... that kind of have the same reading. They're all woohooing, not as well as Philip Seymour Hoffman. They're not as good at the woohoo.
Yes, it's all like, at any time they go through something, they do a quick check around to make sure no one's been killed. And then once they get the okay, it's all woohoos. Tornadoes!
The other thing is, now that I think about it, there's all these people, way too many, this bloated cast of different people. But the whole idea of in every movie that you put a team together is that each one has their thing that they have
yes,
to do.
Yes, there's a specialist in things.
Right.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if Ocean's 11 ended with everybody in a room watching a TV while just George Clooney walked in, pulled the heist, and then walked back out? And then they go, woo!
Exactly.
They didn't even leave the room? That's what happens. Yeah. Nobody does anything but the two main characters.
Clooney and Roberts go in and do everything, and then fucking Brad Pitt, the Chinese guy, Bernie Mac, they're all just hanging out. Right. Yeah, who would be the dust man in that situation?
Ooh.
Damon?
Brad Pitt's name is Rusty, so that's kind of close.
That is kind of close.
Elliot Gould?
No, there isn't a... There should be, because they always talk about money in this movie, there should be, like, a guy that's, like, a little bit shady giving them their funding. That'd be fun, right?
Well, that's what Elliot Gould kind of is.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
the shady guy. Also, though, in those Ocean's movies, there's no fat, ugly guy.
Bernie Mac? Sorry.
He's the closest,
that's, right? I mean, you
that's
got
what I'm thinking, yeah.
you got Casey Affleck, the cons. I mean, it's all
handsome,
just,
handsome.
Yeah, it's yeah. all just handsome devils
it's
in
handsome
that movie.
City.
You know, even the weird circus guy, the little Chinese guy, he's yeah. handsome in his arm. He's physically fit.
Oh, yeah,
even though he's a weird circus performer, it's still
there
fine.
There is that, like, nerdy snail computer guy.
Yeah, you're right. There he is.
He's pretty ugly. Like, he's just, and he's not even fat. He's just kind of not attractive.
He's the one in that group that's paying for sex. Although Brad Pitt could be one of those characters that he's paying for, like, highly paid sex.
I'm saying you walk into a club with Brad Pitt, George Clooney, Casey Affleck, the list goes on. There's some runoff, and that's where that guy gets some. Like, there's, like, a group, a bachelorette. They run into a bachelorette party, and there's,
right.
like, 10. Little snail guy's getting his while somebody's like, "You, I could just close my eyes and imagine you're Brad Pitt because I just saw him tonight." It's kind of the same difference.
I want a movie where the Ocean's Gang just goes to a bachelor party.
Yeah.
It would be infinitely better than this. So back to the subject matter at hand here, Twister. So the whole thing is like, oh, man, you're back. You're going to see Dorothy fly. And he's like, no, I just need these divorce papers signed. And Helen Hunt's like, oh, what, divorce papers? Oh, I'm sorry, were there divorce papers? And she's dicking him around so bad. And this is like shitty classic movie ex-wife.
Yeah.
Just doing all the things to make this guy's life a living hell.
But we're supposed to like it. We're supposed to be behind her because, like, she's just, like, you know, she's, like, kind of a woman scorned for some reason. And it's, like, a thing where, like, but she's only doing it because she loves him. But it's inappropriate for her to love him at this point.
Exactly.
Or outwardly love him, you know?
Yeah, because she's signing them, and then she gets distracted by a Twister.
Sure.
And then so she leaves the... paper on the just leaves the divorce papers on the hood of the car. It's this idea that she these earthly things as marriage and men are secondary
yeah,
to
yeah.
the real what really means something mm-hmm. is getting that storm.
Totally.
But it's just so infuriating because you're like, just stop touching and moving things for a second
mm-hmm.
and you have to. Bill Paxton doesn't take the opportunity because the movie is forcing him to fall back in love with her. Just like, stop moving. Sign the papers. I'm going home.
Yes.
Well, this whole movie, the whole message of this movie is like, just don't give up your rock star life, man. Like, you could be happy as a weatherman. Probably not, though. You got to chase these storms and fuck your new old lady because your old lady's way cooler and way hotter and way much more of a good time.
Yeah.
Like, that's all this movie does. And, well, like, this poor chick just gets dragged along while he just flirts with Helen Hunt and essentially just rekindles this romance
right
in front of
her. Yeah. She's got to watch 90% of it.
I'm Joe Harding.
Oh, hello. Nice to meet you.
Bill just told me the happy news.
Which?
Us, marriage. Joe, Melissa.
It's happy news.
I guess it probably seems kind of sudden.
Seems sudden?
Dude, you taking the vows? That's sweet.
Well, we just wanted to get it done before Billy started his new job.
That's right. Weatherman.
What?
And also, by the way, she's doing all this on hands down the most terrifying day of her life.
Of course. By 12 o'clock, she's had the worst day I could ever imagine. And this movie ends as a movie is ending at night.
Uh-huh.
So she's still got 10 hours of rough road ahead of her.
But that's
this
thing.
Day.
And we, as an audience, are supposed to be like, oh my God, what a fucking bitch. Look at this woman crying and sniveling while Helen Hunt is fucking there. She's like, you know, she's there. She's living the dream, man.
Well, the other thing is, I mean, and this is like, it's a character that Crichton writes a lot. Like, this woman is the lawyer from Jurassic Park.
Yes.
Right? Like, she's always on the cell phone. It's all business, business, business. And she sucks because she doesn't give a fuck about tornadoes. You know what? I just watched this movie. I don't give a fuck about tornadoes either. I really don't. I don't give a fuck about clouds, about wind velocity, whatever. And you know what? I'm not a fucking loser. Well, I'm a loser, but not in that respect. But this movie would paint me to be a real fucking loser because I have a fucking steady job and I want to have like a nice house and a solid relationship. Not run around like a fucking baby in a Tonka truck chasing tornadoes.
I'll tell you this. And he drives her out in the middle of nowhere and then goes on a 10-plus-hour terror, just the most terrifying thing. If somebody says like, hey, do you mind driving with me an hour to here, I have to pick something up, and it's going to take 5 minutes. At 6 minutes, I'm like, God fucking damn it. Let's go home. Don't drive me. Like, it's the worst day.
Dude, the pulling the wool over your eyes as to how long something's going to take is the most unfair. I had that happen to me one time. This guy was like, hey, man, you want to come with me? I'm just going to take a ride real quick and go get gas. I was gone for 7 hours, and somehow it involved eating sushi with this man's mother.
Oh, God, you didn't mean a parent?
I got so fucking hijacked on a trip to a gas station. It's just not even funny.
I will say something about meeting parents is I need a 2-day window to get myself ready for. You can't just like pop me by your parents. It's just I need to be prepared to meet somebody that's older and established and like be able to paint myself in a positive light.
It was the first year of college. I had known the man for 9 days. Unfucking fair.
But also here's something about this getting back to the movie is like, yeah, you're right. That sucks. It's like when you get ripped away from everything and like you get taken on a trip you don't want to take. This woman has to drive with her new fiance, this man that she loves. She wants to marry him. And like his fucking Black Cloud ex-wife has been dodging them for months. And now he has to drive out in the middle of nowhere. She should be fucking furious. And she should be giving Helen Hunt death eyes. But she's actually quite pleasant.
Yeah, she's like, oh, very nice to meet you, this, that, and the other thing. I would fucking spit in her face and be like, Bill Paxton, get that woman to sign that shit. I'm going to be in the car.
Yeah, you got 5 goddamn minutes, lady.
I think the movie just had to maneuver her so that you didn't like her but didn't hate her right up until the end. So she just they just wrote such a middle-of-the-road character that actress had no choice but to display no emotion.
Yeah.
No reaction. They tell a whole story about how back in the day they call him the Extreme because I guess he got naked and threw a bottle of Jack Daniels at a Twister.
It's the worst thing ever. And he was naked and said to the Twister, have a drink. And threw the bottle of whiskey at it. And then they are telling this story with such reverence that they're like, and you know what? The bottle didn't even touch the ground. Yes, it did. At some point, it touched the fucking ground. Maybe it was a mile away. Who cares? It's the worst story of all time.
Also, you could never hear someone saying anything in a tornado. You could never, in a million years, hear anyone say anything in a tornado.
I don't need a tornado-related tall tale, okay? Because you know what's extreme enough? An asshole that goes and stands 50 feet from a tornado.
Yeah.
That, in my book, is pretty extreme. He doesn't have to be naked. He doesn't have to be drunk. He doesn't have to be talking to the tornado, by the way, and threatening it and whatnot. Just being there is extreme enough for me.
So, I mean, like, also part of this is, like, Bill Paxton's like, sign these papers. And then he sees Dorothy and he's like, all right. He does make kind of a deal with her. He's like, this is my dream. I never thought you could make this thing happen. You got one day to get her to fly.
Right. You got me for 24 hours. Let's see if we can get this experiment off the ground. / maybe I'll be fucking you by the time the credits roll.
Which,
so now get in this van with somebody that we call Dusty.
Yeah, it's kind of a legitimate name.
And Dusty is like, Philip Seymour Hoffman's character is a real fucking creep in this movie.
It's so great,
this
though.
This is the first new poon he's seen in fucking 60 days. And he's just like touching her. He's like, hey, babe, you know what they call the middle of a twister? The suck zone. And you ever hear the suck zone, lady?
He's like right in this woman's ear like the fucking candy man. And he's just like, suck zone. And you're just like, oh, man. But think of it this way, though. Like, the Dust Man is obviously a big fucking horn dog.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just listening to sexy Eric Clapton music and just fucking smoking weed and drinking all those pina coladas. And he's got what? Helen Hunt, who's obviously off limits because she's the boss. She's his fucking, she's the Extreme's ex-wife. She's ex-Mrs. Extreme. Okay. And obviously she would have nothing to do with him. And then you got this fucking other woman who may or may not be banging this other fucking troll that's involved in this group of losers. So he's got nothing.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. This woman walks in and he's like, well, she's got an awful haircut. Let's see if I can make this work.
Yeah, and I mean, the funny thing is, he's got that TV that through which he plays all his music. Not a stereo or not. He plays it through tapes and TV. You're not telling me in that barn burner van he's driving around, he doesn't have all sorts of pornography out for everyone to see?
You just want to watch a couple of these tapes I got. There's like a couple of girls, there's Japanese chicks, whatever.
How many times do you think... Because it definitely happened. I'm not asking you guys. Did he forget to change audio A to B? And so he turned on pornography and played on the bullhorn?
There's a deleted scene where they're like, oh man, another twister! Dustman, get us some tunes! And he hit the play button and they're just this woman's just like, well, this is my first time at a doctor's office, like really loud. And he's like, oh God, oh no! And he's just like, the doctor's like, well, you might as well get naked. He's like, Jesus, shit. Where's Aerosmith?
Frank Zappa's really weird, right, guys?
And he just can't pull over because they're chasing this twister. You have to keep that van at 55 miles per hour. It's a Yandaba movie. You can't slow down, not for that twister. I don't know. There's just been this pain in my butt.
Oh, fucking shit, go! He's just throwing. He's got his big 2-liter Coke, and he's just throwing. He's pouring Coke on the machine. Trying to fry it out.
Maybe it'll short circuit and they'll just dump all the soda all over it. And then they're like, well, all your equipment's destroyed. The Dorothy Project is useless.
Because Philip Seymour Hoffman's pornography got mixed in.
You know what, Dusty? We're going to have to let you go, man. This is the last time your pornography addiction ruins this science experiment.
What is the matter with you?
You stole my design, you son of a bitch!
Calm down!
What the hell are you talking about?
Dorothy, you took her, you damn thief!
Oh, I get it. You want to take credit for my design, is
that
it?
You're a liar. She was our idea, and you know it.
Unrealized idea. Unrealized.
Oh, so they saddle up.
We're chasing twisters, and this is the first time we drive by Carrie Elway's.
Yeah, by the way, getting this cast even deeper is the bad team, the fucking Black Knight team of this movie. Essentially, it's a fairly bad script, so it's not fully fleshed out what's going on here, but Cary Elwes used to be a partner of theirs, and he has most obviously stolen Bill Paxton's design for the Dorothy Project, and he also sold out and got corporate funding. What the fuck does that mean? Did Taco Bell fucking supply the funds to make this? They're like, oh yeah, his corporate funding.
Well, Bill Paxton has the best line in the movie where he's like, yeah, his name is Jonas, which, A, fake name. And he's just like...
Unless it's a James Bond movie, that's a fake name.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, Jonas, he's in it for the money, not the science. How much fucking money can you make chasing twisters?
If he gets money from people that are willing to donate to him,
yeah,
then builds a Dorothy that actually works, then sells that information so as it could help people... That's what a business is.
Like, yeah.
And in the end, his product is information to help people tornado.
And they've got. The thing is, like, everything they have is sleek and new and nice. They have like nice fans. Like it's all like uniform. All these
are all
fans.
Jet black. Of course they are.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that's you're right. That's not a bad thing,
right? The problem is the motivation of the plan is totally fine, right? I mean, people do it all the time. Scientists are constantly looking for research funding or whatever. And fuck, if you're going to pay me to do something, whatever. That's not selling out. Like, you're trying to get your thing done. It's shitty in process and in practice because he obviously stole Bill Paxton's design.
Yeah.
Because it's another big Red Bull freezer with fucking little Christmas ornaments in it.
I would slightly contest the idea that he stole the design, considering Bill Paxton's design was spherical and didn't work, and his design was rectangular in shape, cubical, and did work. So I don't know how he really, really like could be considered a thief. He obviously made something different.
I mean, it's a garbage can with a bunch of sensors in it. At the end of the day, guys, let's just...
Point taken.
Let's not... This isn't Tesla and Edison we're talking about. This is a garbage can that takes information.
So in this alternate ragtag group of highly paid losers. You have Cary Elwes. You got, what's his name? Zach Grenier.
Yeah.
Character actor. He's the boss in Fight Club.
He's, yeah, he's like Cary Elwes' main man who's driving the truck. Keep that in mind because, whoo.
So you also got the dude who plays Jimmy Barrett on Mad Men. He's also on Lost, by the way. Three Lost actors are in this movie, which is great. You also have Jake Busey for a hot second. If you missed that, you can only spot him by the teeth because he's got those classic Busey family teeth, and then he's just gone. But he's there for a second. A
couple of character actors from, I think, Renaissance Man. I'm pretty sure the black guy from The Crow is one of them too.
Ernie Hudson?
No, the bad black guy from The Crow.
Oh, where he beats the shit out of him in that alley?
Yeah, and he's got those knives. It's pretty badass.
The point is, you want to talk about a who's who rogues gallery of, like, D-level actors. It's insane that all these people went on to do stuff.
And also, we're at 20 tornado chasers, and I'm like, all right, I'm expecting at least, like, 12 tornado deaths out of both teams. Like, real-world Road Rules Challenge, and, like, uh-huh. That's how they keep scores, who makes it at the end.
Which I find funny, because on that first season of Road Rules, there was a dude who looked like Jake Busey.
That's... Oh, yeah.
There's a standoff scene at a gas station where, like, Cary Elwes is given this big... A press conference, by the way.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, to be fair, I don't think it's supposed to be like MSNBC. It's like Podunk News 5.
But no, but yeah. But I mean, the funny thing is, like, they, and later we're watching this news conference and all this stuff. Like, it's getting coverage. It's like any other movie about anything. Like, it's like Kingpin with bowling. It's just, and this is a world in which everybody's talking about bowling all the time. This is a world in which everybody's talking about Twisters all the time.
Right, but a bowling alley can't just become a gigantic spherical force and murder everybody.
Also, though, I think, like, it's probably fair to say, right, that in Tornado Alley, people are probably talking about Twisters a whole lot.
Sure.
And this will come into play a little later in the movie, too. The whole idea of, like, already by the time we get to this gas station, there's already been, like, two or three Twisters that have touched down. I'm sure the towns around this area are a Twitter with talk about Twisters, okay? I just fucking Gene Shalit-ed the shit out of that last sentence. But yeah.
Your mustache got thicker when you did.
I sold him 2 Snickers almonds one time. That's a story for another day. So he's giving this press conference, and Bill Paxton's like, oh, what the fuck? And he sees the fucking Red Bull container of all his fucking garbage ornaments, and he's like, you stole my invention.
He does a great thing, like a good high school move where he knocks his hat off first. Like, he runs up and slaps his silly hat off, and he starts yelling at him.
That's when you see the Jake Busey teeth for half a second.
Does he catch it in his mouth?
No, he's too busy munching on a carrot.
There's a great small moment, too, while Jonas is talking about his version, the Dorothy 3, how it technologically advanced. He's like, most technologically advanced thing ever made.
Yeah.
It's got this, and this, and this, this, and this. And he opens it up, and you see them. He's like, and this, and does this. But then he has to manually close the top.
Well, much like a garbage can, the top's not going to put itself back on.
And the best thing is, like, they're pulling him away, and, like, Jeremy Davies is like, forget him, man. He's a corporate kiss butt. What are you talking about? He's just a scientist. You're all scientists do is get money to make their science. However it happens, that's what a scientist is. They get money from corporations. They get money from colleges. They get money from anywhere.
I mean, he's just mad that Cary Elwes had the foresight to fucking beat them to it.
I mean, it'd be fucking funny because this movie has obviously corporate sponsorship from Pepsi because it's everywhere. That it'd be like you should turn that on its ear and like dress up your evil scientists in Pepsi garb, like they're Pepsi scientists.
Like NASCAR,
yeah, exactly.
Wearing a shitty NASCAR jumpsuit.
But the mentality of this group is that the less you shower, the more of a scientist you are, and only real scientists.
Yeah, it's certainly true of the Dustman. Yeah.
How many conversations says, wait, so Helen Hunt's the one that has to tell him when he doesn't shower for too long.
Yeah. Well, she's the boss.
But who's complaining about it first?
whatever unfortunate female scientist goes to blow him and gets a fucking face full of horror.
Oh God. Just there's a lot of just
nightmare
fucking
down there.
A lot of rank cheese down there.
So it's also at this point where we're led into my most hated sequence of this movie. So they're hanging out and they're trying to figure out like where this fucking storm's going. And all of a sudden, this entire ragtag group of losers decides they're a little bit hungry. And it's this whole thing where, like, Alan Ruck is, like, the map guy.
His name is Rabbit, by the way.
Oh, my God. So, by the way, you know the character's name's way better than the rest of us, dude.
Yeah, I wrote them all down.
So Rabbit's like, oh, hey, you know, we're right down the thruway from Flippity-Flap, Oklahoma. And Helen Hunt's like, no. I don't think so. And they're like, you know, we're kind of hungry. And I'm like, just get to it. Whatever you're getting to, get to it.
Oh, no, you know what? That's the thing I wanted to talk about, because they do that gag twice in this movie, and it's the worst gag to do in television, and it's the worst gag to do in movies, which is the old, no way, no way, there is absolutely no way I am getting on a boat. And you cut.
Freak out.
Yeah. You just cut. To whatever, they do it twice. It's that scene, and there's another scene. I think it's like Bill Paxton being like, "No way are we gonna drive into this twister." Whoop! And it's the same fucking shit.
Hey, you know what, Joe? Some of us couldn't help but notice how close we are to Wakita.
No.
Yeah, and Aunt Meg wouldn't mind a pit stop, right?
No.
Red meat. We crave sustenance.
Guys, we are not invading my aunt.
Food.
Food.
Hey. We are absolutely not going.
So, cut to them pulling up to a pretty nice, like, country home. There's, like, a pretty sweet garage/studio going on. A lot of weird hippie, like, metal workings in the front lawn that are for sale. And enter one of my favorite character types in cinema history. Elderly, widowed, ex-hippie women, because they just kind of have a sweet life.
They have a sense of self that I respect.
Yeah.
Earth mamas. You know,
It's, she's a total earth mama, and it's Helen Hunt's Aunt May, who may or may not have raised her. I don't know. It's never really specified, because her mother wasn't also killed by that twister, but whatever. It's fucking Aunt May, because
who cares?
Yeah,
we don't know where that overweight mother ends up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because it's like the dad, and like, she pretends she's an orphan. You know, she kind of carries herself like an orphan.
You think there's a deleted scene where that woman succumbs to diabetes? Just out of curiosity? That's mean. So they're like, oh, we're at Aunt May's house. And the same thing happens when Bill Paxton comes into this movie, right? This overjoyed... like sense of familiarity, right?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, Bill Paxton's back. Here's the extreme, back in the saddle. It's the same thing. Like, oh, hey, May, we love you, May. Oh my God, May. It's like,
oh, I'm gonna. You want to marry me, May?
Oh yeah, May. Yeah. If you were 20 years younger.
Yeah. The old, I'm gonna pretend to hit on this old woman because I know full well nothing's gonna come of it except her having a broken heart.
I don't know about pretending in Philip Seymour Hoffman's in the Dustman's case.
You think he'd get in? There,
he's probably a fan of granny porn. I mean,
well, my grandson's not home right now. Fuck no, turn it off.
Need sustenance, Aunt May.
Oh God. So
this gravy's practically a food group. Yum yum yum.
He's definitely a splasher.
So. They basically barge into this woman's house and force her to cook them like 12 steaks, fucking eggs over hard, some mashed potatoes and gravy, which Philip Seymour Hoffman does say are world famous, which it's like, no one's coming from fucking Tokyo to eat. Like, I hate shit like that. Like, because they're all trying to, like, initiate Bill Paxton's fiance, right? So the whole thing's like, you know, oh, man, you don't know cooking till you know May's cooking. Her gravy's world famous. Shut the fuck up. There's nothing world famous unless it's world famous. I hate that so much. My world famous blah, blah, blah. Really? Does everyone throughout the world know? No, you know what's world famous? The Beatles. Not this old woman's fucking gravy recipe. It's such bullshit. I hate lines like that. And this woman's like, well, I guess I'll just feed a whole fucking group of losers.
And poor Jamie Gertz, at this point, I mean, like, we're not talking about all the Twister action because it's kind of boring and repetitive. Like, literally, it's just them in cars and shit's falling and they swerve and everything happens and it's rain and hail.
It's really repetitive, boring action that's not worth discussing.
But one thing that happens is, like, Jamie Gertz is, like, driving by herself because Bill Paxton needs to get Roadhead from Helen Hunt and needs to be in the same car with her. And, like, poor Jamie Gertz is following and, like, a truck, like, just misses her and she's, like, shell-shocked. She's terrified.
It's probably the only actual... I mean, I know we're saying that some other people are okay in this movie, but it's the only little bit of, like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
This is a terrible situation. And I always... Like, you're watching, you're like, oh, now Bill Paxton at least has to, in the course of the movie... pretend to take her back to the hotel and something happens.
Yeah.
And she's shaking and he's like, it's just a truck. Just a truck just fell in front of you. Don't worry about it.
It's a spider. You know, like, no, it's a huge truck that fell from the sky.
Yeah.
And then you got Foffman in there and he's like, don't worry, you're totally in the suck zone right now.
Everybody's in Foffman's suck zone always. So
anyone everybody. And anything can get in his suck zone in this movie.
And yeah, so like she's at this point, why is she sitting down to dinner with these people? She should be like, okay, we have time to stop chasing tornadoes. You don't get to go have mashed potatoes. You get to drive me to the fucking hotel.
Yeah, Bill Paxton takes a shower.
Yeah, exactly.
We're one of only two showers in the whole movie, by the way, which is kind of surprising.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, not one of them.
No,
he's just going straight for that gravy. He does not need to wash his hands.
Oh, that's
And yeah, but and like it's just this scene where like another character I know who's my least favorite of all the renegades is Preacher.
This guy stinks.
He's like blonde. He kind of looks like Martin Mull, like a little
he
bit.
He looks a lot. I thought it was Martin Mull when the movie started,
and it's not. And he's just like, Bill's the most out of control son of a bitch in the game. And they start talking about all this shit, and Jamie Gertz is just like,
Great. This is where they tell the nude throwing whiskey at a tornado.
And you know what
story.
It is? And I mean, this has happened to me before. I mean, like, you know, you have your crazy college stories, right?
Yeah.
And somebody's new, and like, we're all talking college stories. You need to be the person that kind of tempers the conversation so everyone can be involved. You can't just be like throwing around your private jokes and excluding somebody.
But that's what doesn't make any sense about this whole thing, though, is because like, this is like the biggest day of their life. You know what I mean? Like, there's no time to talk. Well, you're not going to talk about the weather because that's all you're talking about. But you know what I mean? Like, you're not going to talk about fucking, you know, the fucking primaries or whatever's going on. You know, what do you think of that new Clinton Global Initiative over in China? Like, you're not talking about that shit because it's the biggest day of your life.
Yeah.
But then also, you know, just don't. Tell stories about this woman's fiance being a total asshole.
Exactly. Know a little bit.
Why don't you be like, and they kind of do this in this scene a little, like, here's some information about tornadoes that might be useful to you. And this is where they talk about the Fujita scale and, like, you know, F1s, 2s, 3s, 4s, you know, the intensity of tornadoes.
They say that it's a tornado is based on how much it can eat.
You're
which
right.
I'm sure Dusty has been.
He's an F7.
Yeah, yeah. Oh man, I am an F7 right now. And this is the most like ridiculous scene too, where Jamie Gertz has to be like, "Oh well, is there an F5?" And the fucking room goes dead, and you're like, "Of course there was."
It's a great drop of the fork on a plate moment.
Like, uh huh. And it's like nobody wants to say what's going on. It's like, well, yeah, that's what fucking ate Helen Hunt's father. It was an F5 tornado.
It's not all right. Look, it's not like everyone's talking about baseball and you bring up the Holocaust. You're talking systematically about F1s, F2s, F3s, F4s, and then she's like, "Hey, how about the next level?" Like, you fucking bitch.
They react like it's fucking Voldemort being named at the dinner table. They are so disgusted with her.
Are you kidding me? Well, you're sitting there eating Aunt May's famous mashed potatoes, you bring up an F5?
Get out of this house. Get out of this house!
No, that was a good-sized twister. What was that, an F3?
Solid F2.
See, now you've lost me again.
It's the Fujita scale. It measures the intensity of a tornado by how much it eats.
Eats?
Destroys.
A little encounter we had back there is a strong F2, F3 maybe.
Bet we see some F4s today.
That'd be sweet.
4 is good. 4 will relocate your house fairly efficiently.
Is there an F5? What would that be like?
The finger of God.
And she's like, has anyone ever seen it? And someone at one point's like, one of us has. Cut to Helen Hunt getting out of the shower, by the way. Thanks for the most exciting 17 seconds of this movie shower scene.
And like, what do you call it there? Like, Aunt May goes up to her and she's like, you know, he didn't keep his part of the bargain. He's not going to be miserable forever. And Helen Hunt's like, is that so hard, so much to ask? Like, no, just, all right, everything's quiet and silent. Sign the fucking papers and send this man and this woman who's in mortal danger on their way.
But he's already made the decision at point. He's already given the 24 hours, so she's not going to back down. Because I think she knows deep down inside Bill Paxton might be the better tornado chaser, because they make reference to the fact that Bill Paxton has the magic ability to look up at the sky and like read clouds, and like everyone does the old like, oh, lick my finger and feel the wind direction thing. He really gets a lot of information out of that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, you better keep this guy on hand at this point. We need him to make this fucking dumb garbage can fly or whatever.
And they make fun of the other team. There's like a big like, you think fancy satellites and computers can track, can track weather patterns? Time has told us yes, they can. Yeah.
Actually, yes, entirely. That's
and I don't believe there's certain of those things where people say that they can feel something. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was like a big fisherman, so he'd always feel like he'd tell where the fish were. He just knew where they were. Like, he wasn't a Native American. He wasn't tapped into some otherworldly shaman-esque ability. He just knew where the fish usually hung out.
Exactly.
It was data collection. That's all that it was.
You know, this Bill character probably prides himself on being 126th Cherokee, you know?
I think he was trying to get those few reparations to help fund this science experiment.
Most definitely.
Which is kind of funny, though, because that whole idea of, like, being able to, like, you just know something in your gut and whatever plays another more ridiculous part in this movie. Much like Jaws the Revenge, when Lorraine Gary was all like, I know that this shark is targeting my family. There is a moment in this movie where they make reference to the idea that Helen Hunt believes that this tornado has come back for her, that it's the same F5 that killed her father? Are you kidding me?
The finger of God, as we call it.
That's right. That's another preacher line. She's like, well, what could do whatever? Or what do you call that? Or something. He's like, what's the finger of God?
No, it's not.
Fuck you, preacher.
Come on, you idiot.
Are the angels bowling when it rains too, preacher? You fucking jackass.
Is that God pissing on the earth?
But yeah, I mean, and they don't really make reference to it because I don't think they want to make this too much of like a spiritual / supernatural kind of a movie. But they admit that she kind of thinks it's the same tornado, which is so crazy.
Yeah, it's really fucking stupid.
That's right at the end of her big breakdown scene where she's trying to pick up all the little Christmas ornaments.
Yeah, because like Dorothy 9 just pulls over like they all do.
But you know what? It's bothered me so much about that. Well, why don't you, like she was like, we gotta pick them up. Why don't you just leave them on the ground if in case it comes back?
Like, maybe you don't have to be in
the
up.
You don't have to be in the garbage can for this to work.
I was thinking the same thing. The garbage can. I mean, it's literally a container that holds them. The Christmas ornaments are doing all the work. The garbage can doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's like the most infuriating scene. Like, from the divorce standpoint, we could talk about like what it means to be really divorced, or what this movie thinks it is to be divorced.
Oh yeah,
like because like it's Bill, fucking Jamie Gertz is sidled with Dusty, and he's like flashing her all sorts of fucking tongue signals as he's driving.
Sucks.
Doing whatever the fuck his scientific job is in the back of the convoy, and in the front is Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt. And they, you know, they try and do the thing, and it doesn't work. And like, there's this big emotional scene where he's like, you know, he says to her, like, he's like, you know, you're always looking for other things. You know, you never see what's right in front of you. Me, and it's like, no, you're divorcing this woman. You have a fiance 10 cars back.
There's no kind of, there's not for a second where Bill Paxton thinks anything he's doing, like his conduct in any capacity, is wrong. Like, there's a part where one of the several times that they just dodge a tornado disaster, he's like, wow, that's crazy. There's a lot of woohoos going on.
Yeah, sure.
And he like puts his arm around her and he's totally fine with it. And he's like, fucking yeah, here we are, baby, chasing storms like always. And then Jamie Gertz is like, I almost died back there. And he's like,
I'm sorry. I forgot to come console you.
Yeah, he's like shaken back to the present day and has no fucking problem with it.
The reason people get divorced is because something breaks in a marriage that cannot be unbroken.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole point. Like, trial separations, maybe infidelities, they don't cause divorces. It's all those little things. And, like, you know, people, you know, relationships are elastic that way. And people still have feelings and whatever. But when you get fucking divorced, it's over. That's the whole point.
Yep.
And, like, this movie doesn't believe that. This movie's like, well, I mean, divorce is just sort of, they're on the wrong path. Like, they just don't. They're just in a big fight, one of those old fights.
And this is definitely the time in America that we're all kind of realizing the infallibility of marriage.
Yeah, sure.
Like this is right around when you hear that statistic, and it's like a soft sell for like America. You know, people aren't working out. Like, you know, like here's two. I mean, if anybody is going to teach me as a child, an adolescent, a teenager, even an adult. About how divorce, it's okay. It's Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
They chose the perfect spokespeople.
Because also, like, the advice that the aunt gives her in that bedroom scene when she gets out of the shower is essentially like, why don't you just try shaking your tail feather this way? And maybe, you know, like her advice is so like, his head will clear up. No, they're getting a fucking divorce, lady.
And he's
got a fiance.
Did you see that rock on that other lady's finger? Like, figure it the fuck out.
Not for nothing. Also, she's a sex therapist. She probably knows a lot of crazy fucking shit that Helen Hunt has no business knowing
because
she's just chasing storms with the Dustman and his fucking pornography collection. Which, you know, maybe she's learning stuff from that video store as well.
If you don't put into practice, it never sinks in.
Joe! Bill! It's coming! It's headed right for us! It's already here.
This is probably the most famous sequence of the movie that I want to talk about because this was essentially all over the trailer and it was kind of what they based the Universal Studios ride off of. The drive-in sequence.
Oh, God.
This fucking thing. There is so much going on in this that's just garbage. Let's start with... We're just going to be playing The Shining up on the... I hate this. Like, we have... The whole thing was like, it's this movie was a Warner Brothers Universal co-production. So on the board, there's a big old... The Shining, Warner Brothers, and playing Psycho, Universal. It's just like, can you just have some dumb monster movie? Because now I'm sitting here through this garbage, and you're showing me Jack Torrance trying to chop down the fucking bathroom door, and I'm like... I kind of want to just put this on. Can I please turn this off and put this better movie on?
Yeah, it's like when you like if somebody's like cooking and then they're like, "Oh, I had this great sandwich," and you're like, "Well, guess what I'm thinking about now?"
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm sure this fucking buttery pasta is great. Psycho and The Shining on a double bill.
That's
is
tough. Actually, that's tough.
Sweet.
Not to, yeah,
it's
not
so
to
sweet. But you know what? It's not once in a lifetime, and it's not worth dying over. And this place is. Packed. It's so packed. It's the fucking scene from Grease. It's so packed.
And everyone's working at the concession stand. Like, nobody's calling in sick or anything.
That concession stand is stocked with 16-year-old girls serving soft serve ice cream.
And, you know, like, Jamie Gertz is like, she just saw her husband. She, like, overheard on the radio that whole speech and, like, she's not feeling too great about herself. Like, she's in a motel, which is right next there.
It's a weird complex where there's, like, a drive-in movie theater, a motel, a fucking airplane hangar, like, all in this one little area connected by a parking lot.
And we're not seeing Philip Seymour Hoffman having his sixth meal of the day somewhere. And then all of a sudden he has the very famous line of, "It's coming! It's coming right for us!"
Yeah, that's the big fucking trailer line for
so
sure.
Once the next one, the big one, comes through and does in Aunt May's house,
yes,
there's all these people that have died. But previously to that, he's told that wife, go to the hotel, you'll be safe there.
Yeah.
So why didn't you tell everybody to go to the hotel to be safe? Because there's all this human death everywhere, but they're focusing, they're thinking, we got to get this so we can save lives in the future. They drive past houses and not say anything and let those people die.
That's what's bullshit about the drive-in scene, though, is they kind of have a responsibility to be like going to the concession stand and saying, like, listen, little girl, can I see your manager? Because I have to tell him that for whatever reason, your clientele does not know this is the biggest night for Tornado Mania ever. And you need to turn off the projector. You need to tell these people to go home. Like, they have that obligation as the scientists who have the information.
Yeah.
If Bill Paxton can fucking whistle at the moon and know what the fuck's going to happen to all these tornadoes, you have that obligation to tell people.
Well, it's really annoying because, like, yeah, and the problem is these people who are, like, all like, wow! And, like, the second a real twister comes, they're not like the A-team that's like, okay, what we need is we need blankets. We need you people to go under there. We're going to do this. We're going to fortify this. Blah, blah, blah. They're like, ah, and run like anyone else. And it's every man for him fucking self.
It's the old adage, what the fuck did you think was going to happen?
Yeah.
These people are so infuriating.
They've taken the position as meteorologists the same as if I'm a doctor. And somebody gets stabbed, and they say, can you help me? And they're like, doctor, yes, I'm a doctor, but I'm curing cancer. Can't help you. Can't help you now. I got bigger fish to fry. Exactly. On the way to the lab right now.
Yeah, I go to the lab. No, but you're right. And also,
give me a fucking Band-Aid.
And again, the death count. This is the scene where Jeremy Davies is, like, hiding in the truck. And, like, you're like, okay, here we go. Someone from this team is going to fucking bite it. It's going to be great. Nope, he gets saved. A hubcap whizzes and cuts Preacher's head, like, almost clean off, but he's just like, ooh, what a bad scrape. Like, no, do something.
He needs to be like Ray Liotta at the third act of Hannibal. Like, just, that fucking melon's gotta be carved right open, man.
Like, for what? Why do I need, like, no one's invested in these characters because you haven't built them up. So let's get some blood on the floor. Like,
that's what's horrible, too, is you have this ragtag group of losers. Mm-hmm. And the person who's, like, near mortally wounded is the sweet little old flower mama back at her fucking metal workshop.
Yeah.
Because her goddamn house gets knocked down. You couldn't expend one of these assholes. No, it's got to be the sweet old woman who cooked them all steak and eggs for free. She was just home reading a nice book and all these scumbags rolled up.
And also, this movie has no excuse to say, well, we wanted it to be a big budget action movie for the family, because Jurassic Park has 5 to 7 of the greatest deaths I've ever
seen. And you're right.
That movie is family friendly as shit. Everybody loves it.
I completely agree with you. You can bring children to Jurassic Park. I don't give a shit. Because it's fine.
You see, like, oh man, these dinosaurs are really fucking out for blood. You know, like, you learn that shit quick. And, like, you'd leave being like, oh wow, twisters are dangerous. So many times do people just, like, hold on to poles and, like, are getting sucked around by twisters and are fine.
There's nothing at stake here. As much as it's, like, camouflaged as high stakes, it's all just, if you just hang on to this pole or tie this belt around your ass or whatever, you can live through the strongest tornado in Oklahoma history.
Yeah.
Because you anchored yourself. There's no stakes in this movie. I wanted a dinosaur to pop out of this fucking tornado and just kill somebody. Because that's going to bring things back down to reality. Like, holy shit, a dinosaur just came in here.
Or Alan Ruck gets clipped by a cow and just bites it.
I took the word. I was just like, was somebody getting hit by a cow? That's funny enough. And at least you get the death count a little bit somewhere.
Man, that cow was beloved by this nation. When this movie came out, all you heard about was the Twister cow. The Twister cow made it into the Universal Studios ride. I said it earlier. I think it made an appearance at the MTV Movie Awards. This fucking cow was honored by American pop culture. And it's the dumbest. And this is, I hate this. I hate. There's ways to do it right, right? Like, there's a way to work in subtle comedy into strong situations. You got Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park. Must go faster, must go faster, must go faster. That's funny enough. That's all you need. You don't need a cow, and then the cow goes back.
Wait, Andrew, I'm sorry. It was actually the same cow. I don't know if you.
There's the punchline of that. I fucking hate it. I think it's the same cow. Shut up, Bill Paxton.
Why don't you fucking keep your eyes on the road?
You're 12 feet from a gigantic tornado, and you're making cracks about cows. vows?
Yeah, also, like, that's the thing, is so long as you keep your, you hit your emergency brake, your car is going to be fine through a tornado. Like, never does the truck go suck right in.
He's got a lot of sandbags in the back.
Well, and also, that I think that cow was celebrated much for the reason Dottie the sheep was. That was probably the first CGI cow of all time. So everyone was like,
it
wow,
might have been.
Wow, look what computers could do.
Very quickly, it's a small thing.
Yeah.
As you get off track, I did read that this was the first movie released on DVD.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
And the last movie released on HD DVD.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Curiosity, by the way, for the old WHM mailbag. Anybody out there fall for the HD DVD scam? I waited till the porn industry settled that score, because that's how that was settled, by the way.
That's exactly how that was settled.
Which is kind of hilarious.
There's a lot of greased palms.
I did not own this movie on DVD, nor HD DVD.
Nope. I watched this on a VHS.
There you go.
Yeah.
So the poor old Aunt May just gets her house knocked down. She's totally wounded. They all go. It's another saddling up, like saddle up and ride scene. There's so many, like, we gotta go. And it's like Foffman realizes, like, he's looking at a map and he's like, well, if the cloud's moving this way, oh man, it's heading right for Aunt May's house. You're like, all right, you're really good at reading maps.
I also realized that if they're so concerned with not running out of money on their budget, then why didn't they get one van and save gas for six trucks of time?
Prune this.
Everybody
fucking
has their own car almost.
Yeah, there's no, they're all driving gigantic trucks and vans, and it's no more than two people to a van. No one is sitting in a back seat.
Dude, outfit a school bus.
Yeah.
There you go. You take out some of the seats. You have a whole command center that's totally mobile, ready to go. You know why? It's probably because of Dusty's pornography collection. That's taken up a lot of the back seat of that
van. Definitely the stench.
And nobody wants to ride with Dusty. He's kind of like Pigpen. He's just got that cloud of crap floating around him.
That's why they stick poor old Jamie Gertz with him.
Well, I want to relay an information you gave to me when I sat down here, which is the deleted scene from this movie.
Oh, classic deleted scene.
Apparently, it's probably in the beginning of the movie, because Dusty's just wearing these fat guy cargo shorts the whole time.
It is at the beginning of the movie where they're all lounging out at their makeshift base camp or whatever.
And apparently you get to see some Foffman scrote.
It's a thing where he plops down in a folding chair and you just see his balls.
He sticks his leg up in the air for 1 second.
Yeah.
And there's a 1 second of it, yeah.
And it was apparently in the theatrical cut, which was also distributed as like VHS screeners back in the day for like industry people and critics and stuff like that to watch the movie.
Yeah.
But then they wound up blurring it or cutting it or whatever from the home video release. But probably somewhere, if you Google image searched it, there's some dusty ball sack.
Yeah, you can find it on MrLotOfSkin.com.
So this old woman's on the brink of death, but they save her because, again, there's just no stakes in this movie, so who cares?
And she's all bloody like she is a True Blood when she gets fucking cut up.
Oh, yeah, it's Lois Smith, the grandmother from True Blood.
Oh, yeah,
right.
She gets murdered.
She gets so carved murdered. Up like a goose in that show.
If anybody has not seen the first season of True Blood, don't.
So she also, this is where she delivers the most ridiculous line of the movie, where she's telling, like, Helen Hunt's like, all right, listen, Aunt May, like, you know, this is all a joke. I'm going to go to the hospital with you because now shit's getting real. And she's like, no, because you're doing this grand science experiment. You're the only one that can stop the tornado. You have to tell. It's like, man, I know you just had a really, like, horrible accident or whatever, but get your shit together, because no one can stop a tornado. You're an idiot, old lady.
Also, I mean, you know, stop tornadoes, you know, the warning thing. There's 9 other scientists out there that could do just as well or better, because they could lift the garbage can a little better than Helen Hunt can.
When you realize that all they have to do is just get this thing close enough to a tornado so the tornado picks it up, anybody can do this. The Dustman could do it. Preacher, the Bridge Troll, Joey Slotnick.
It's just all about them and those final hours not being able to move something 5 feet. That's it. That's why they dump all of those things.
They just can't pick up fucking Oscar the Grouch and dump it into the tornado.
Well, no, they also realize that from Aunt May's little wind chimes, like, oh my God, all we need to do is equip these things with Pepsi cans. So there's a scene of them cutting up Pepsi things, making propellers.
Yeah, so they like flutter up into the tornado or whatever. That's
Pepsi
great.
Makes everything better.
Which is, it's so annoying because there's a kind of like making the experiment better montage. But all it is watching someone do a really shitty arts and craft project.
Yeah.
Philip Seymour Hoffman's like measuring stuff. And he's like, all right, we're going to cut here. And I'm like, I don't give a shit about watching this.
Here's a question. How many out of this extreme, we keep calling them all scientists. We're not entirely sure. How many think how many doctorates do we think
so
in this crew?
Okay, so you're talking scientist versus enthusiast.
Yes. Versus guy riding a bus with a lot of pornography.
Well, no, he definitely has a degree. He has to, because that's the way the world works. People like that are allowed to get PhDs.
But does he have the highest level of education there?
He's probably got a PhD. He's probably like a crazy fucker.
He's an idiot savant.
Probably,
yeah. Definitely,
yep.
He is.
I would say out of the enthusiasts, you're talking Joey Slotnick, maybe.
The bridge troll's definitely got one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course.
She's got an associate, I bet.
I think Belzer is just there because he's her boyfriend. You know?
Yeah, Belzer might be banging that chick.
Mm-hmm.
I would say
Preacher, not so much.
No, Preacher's enthusiast, and I bet you because all he does is read a fucking map, Alan Ruck's an enthusiast.
Mm-hmm.
He's like a middle school science teacher who loves the weather.
And Jeremy Davies is probably like an intern.
Yeah, I think he's an intern, yeah.
He went on to play like a crazy quantum physicist on Lost, but I feel like in 1996, he's probably just the fucking intern. Because he's the big pussy too, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like, and again, there's no character development here, so we just have to kind of walk around in the dark and figure this out. But like, you know, yeah, if he's scared of it, maybe it's like his first run with chasing storms or whatever.
And you know what? That's a good point, because there's two ways. If you have a big team of scientists, there's two reasons to have them. One is every one of them is going to play a part, and every one of them is going to move the story forward. Like, you know, okay, you go there and you do this, and like everyone, like, you know, like an Event Horizon or like a Prometheus, where like everybody is doing their specific thing that you know that they can do.
Yeah.
Or they get picked off one by one, also like Prometheus. But you know what I mean? Like, those are the only two reasons to do that. Other than that, you just got people standing around.
There's so much standing around. And that's all they do. They just stand around, and Philip Seymour Hoffman's their fucking voice box that yells things that are totally tubular and radical, and it's fine. So
we can get to Cary Elwes' end at this point.
Yeah, because it's basically, we're in the third act of the movie now, and it's like they have one last chance because they have one final garbage can that they can launch off into the Twister, and it's an F5. Like, that's a shitty thing where, like, they're by the ambulance and May's getting taken to the hospital, and Philip Seymour Hoffman's like, oh, hey, Helen Hunt, I don't know if you want to hear this, but the Magic Weather Service just said that it was an F5. And she's like, that's the fucking white whale.
Hey, May, do you want to kiss me on the mouth?
If
May, do you want to kiss me on the mouth?
I
want
to kiss you, May.
I'm a fucking idiot.
We almost got through it, didn't we?
I had to. Because I just saw that movie last night. That scene is really long. Like, him saying, I'm a fucking idiot and crying, that's like
sitting
4 minutes.
Car.
Which is, again, it's amazing, though, right? Because you have to sort of think, because it's a year later, right? Boogie Nights was 97.
Yeah.
P.T. Anderson must have gone to the theater and seen Twister at some point. Was like, this guy would make a perfect Scotty or Andy or whatever his name is.
Scotty.
Yeah, like, you think now, like, he's making an asshole out of himself in this fucking natural disaster movie. But there's a good shot. I mean, also, because we all know now Philip Seymour Hoffman's an amazing actor. But,
sure.
Like, P.T. Anderson was like, yeah, this guy, you know, maybe he saw him in a play or something. I don't know. But, like, this guy's fucking great and fucking zany in this Twister movie. He'll be great as, like, the weird fucking secretly gay camera operator in my what will soon be classic fucking movie about pornography.
Well, he definitely, I mean, the good thing about Foffman is that he didn't just take anything for very long. Even some of the movies that are a little more, I don't know, I mean, I can't think of more than maybe two movies that I feel like he's just, it's just a job for him, you know.
He's
what I'm
really good in Scent of a Woman, which I think is one of his earliest movies.
Oh, that's right. Of course.
Yeah.
He's really good in Scent of a Woman. He's good in Talented Mr. Ripley. I don't know where that stacks up against this. That's probably Talented Mr. Ripley is probably after this.
I don't have a date on that one.
97, 98, but yeah, he's always kind of just really good at what he's doing.
So he comes up and he's like, there's an F5. you know, and it's our last chance to throw a garbage can at the sky. So let's go do this. And they're basically, they're again neck and neck with the Cary Elwes bad guy team, who, by the way, really just falls off of this movie after they get into the second act.
Yeah, I mean, like, they don't stop to help them a couple of times. They, like, drive by when they're in trouble. So that makes them really terribly shitty. Not
right.
Really. I would just be driving by like, well, there's 15 of them. They're fine. You know what I mean? Like,
they can't all possibly be injured.
Somebody can fix that problem. That's not my team.
There's a little fucking militia going on there. So they pull up, and it's neck and neck. They're going for the Twister or whatever. And Bill Paxton, in his fucking wind talker glory, is just like, I just have a feeling that the Twister is going to turn this way. And they're like on the radio. They're trying to get like Cary Elwes' attention. He's like, oh, wanting to share information now, do you?
Yeah. that accent is everywhere in this movie.
He starts off when they're doing that press conference outside the diner. He sounds like a member of fucking Skynyrd. And by the end of this thing, he's Moriarty. Like, it's such an accent fall off. It's embarrassing.
Halfway in there, he's Tom Waits when he gets real upset, too. He's all over the place.
So they're like, it's him and Zach Grenier, and they're like driving towards this Twister. And Zach Grenier, the poor bastard, who's also like, they flushed him out a little bit. There's a couple of times where he's like, oh, should we stop and help them?
Yeah, he's the driver.
And Cary Elwes is like, no,
I don't think so. They should be fine, aren't they?
And they're driving along, and Bill Paxton's like, listen, this thing's probably going to turn, and you're going to be in some real shit. And Cary Elwes is like, no, 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 like, that's bullshit or whatever. Cut to a gigantic, like, ladder falling out of the tornado right through the windshield on Zach Grenier.
It's such a gory shot, man. It's awesome, but it's terrible because, like, this poor bastard.
The guy, like, that should be the Cary Elwes. Like, he gets that, and then the truck goes out of control and goes into the Twister, and that's whatever. But no, this poor fuck has to get a ladder through the skull, and then the Twister gets sucked up and falls to the ground and explodes like a TIE fighter.
Oh, yeah. This is like, pew.
It's such a small little flame circle. It's great.
But, I mean, like, Cary Elwes is like, no, no, no. I am the requisite 15 feet away from a Twister, which you need to be in a car. Which, like, apparently that's, like, all you need to do is, like, when they're at a different point, they're, like, trying to drive away from the Twister, they, like, they reverse for, like, 10 minutes and they're fine, you know?
It's not like it's a nuclear blast or something like that. This is a fucking thing that's moving all over the place. It's an entity. It's a gigantic moving wind cloud.
Yeah.
But then it ends with, like, no, no, my instruments tell me it won't be coming towards me.
Yeah, and they just get fucking taught a lesson and a half.
And again, like, if we're going to do this, if we're going to rain the wrath of God on the corporate scientists, let's get them all. Like, let's all, like, fucking 12 trucks in the air, and they're all, like, horrifically killed.
Jake Busey, the dude from Mad Men, I want them all 6 feet under by the credits of this movie.
No, and, like, the best part is, like, this is a horrific death. And, like, Bill Paxton's like, oh, so stupid. Like, dude, that guy just bit it. Like, a little respect.
They do have a great shot of Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton reacting in horror as they see the truck explode, which ain't too bad.
Yeah,
it's a lot of like, oh!
<he's> like,
yeah, Bill Paxton does kind of have an ew face going on. Oh!
You think if that happened, there's a lot of silence. And then Dusty's like, looks like they got too close to the suck zone. Like, Dusty, not now!
Yeah.
Belzer has a Star Wars reference. Like, shut up. Because there is that awful line where Todd Field goes out, that's no moon! That's a space station! Woohoo! It's like so terrible.
You think someone's like, Porkins!
Oh, Dusty, that's in poor taste.
Dusty, they haven't been dead 10 seconds.
Sorry, suck zone.
So they pull up and they're like, oh, okay, you know what's a great thing to weigh this fucking garbage can down? This truck. And they make a big deal throughout this movie about, oh, Bill Paxton got a new red truck, a big cherry red truck. Look at you, big fancy weatherman, asshole pussy. So he sacrifices this, like, symbol of his new life to, like, they put a brick on the fucking gas pedal or whatever. Or no, it's really annoying because he's like, all right, he actually has the line, let me set the cruise control. You're like, fucking come on. And he sets this thing, and the truck just drives into the Twister, and Dorothy flies tubular.
And, like, everyone, all the 19 other scientists they have with them are like, woohoo, did
so
it!
So much woohoo.
And they're like three towns away looking at computers like they're the most badass extremes of extreme.
That's what's annoying. I would pull back there and like all, you know, Dusty, all these guys, fucking Rabbit, whoever, Preacher, they get out and they're just like, yo, we did it, we did it. If I were Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt after like going through that whole ordeal, I would have been like, you did nothing. I sacrificed my truck and my well-being. You fucking stood miles behind.
Listen, our names are on the paper. You're in the fucking footnotes, all right, Dusty?
I imagine if his new wife, when he got back to the hotel, half considering taking him back, she's like, oh, what happened to your truck? He's like, well, I sacrificed it to the Twister.
She's like, you know, that was in my name, right?
Yeah. That was a birthday gift.
You know, my insurance is fucked from now on, right?
Explain that to an insurance agent.
Yeah, exactly.
I drove it into a Twister. And it's red.
So they drive this, you know, they drive the truck into the Twister. Dorothy flies and everything. And then they make the Twister really mad.
Oh, yeah. This Twister is all of the Twisters in this movie growl.
There's tigers and fucking camel grunts and all sorts of shit throughout this movie. So this thing gets pissed off, and it's like, I don't think so, said God, and starts chasing them.
Yep.
And they're carless, so they just have to run through fields, and they get to, like, a farm or whatever.
And there's a bunch of pitchforks and, like, daggers and scythes, and they're like, who are these people? Great question, Helen Hunt.
Yeah.
Because this barn makes no sense.
I would love if they just ran in and Leatherface was standing there like, oh, is there a tornado out there or what? He's like, run, Leatherface, there's a tornado! And then, like, you know, he runs in, he's got his, like, makeup lady mask on, like, and the fucking grandpa's, like, still trying to, like, beat someone with a sledgehammer. Like, no, no, grandpa, there's a Twister!
Fat Dilbert's riding around in his wheelchair, like, oh, no!
Get back here, Sally! Get back here, Sally! I fucking hate that guy in that movie, that fucking Franklin who sounds like the goddamn Undertaker.
No, you mean Paul Bearer.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Paul Bearer. Yeah, you're right. The Undertaker would be much more manly sounding. So they, after they run through the fucking House of Horrors, they come out the other side, and they're like, oh, here's a water pump station or whatever. And again, it's the whole idea of, like, as long as you're anchored to something, this thing doesn't possess the ability to tear you to shreds.
And it's an F5. The finger of God, Preacher, that should be able... That would, like, I'm sorry, all they do is tie belts around their waist to these pipes. It would break their backs. It would break their backs. It would break every bone in their body.
They would have been smote from the earth.
Yeah. There's nothing left of those people. I'm sorry. Like, there's not...
But instead, what we're delivered is the tornado, like, goes right through them, and they're, like, hanging on, and the belts are there, and they're, like, looking up at the Twister, and it's, like, the fulfillment of something said earlier in the movie about, like, no one's seen the inside of a Twister and lived to tell about it or whatever. And they're both looking. Let me tell you something. If, like, fucking little splinters of wood and nails and screws and cow shits flying all over the place, I'm going to close my eyes. I'm going to close my eyes until the wind stops blowing. I'm not going to look up. Not even for a second, because that shit's terrifying, and I don't want to go blind.
Even the dust whipping into your eyes at 100 miles an hour will blind you for the rest of your life.
And they're just staring like in awe at it.
If I'm in the center of a Twister, I'm probably getting handsy with Helen Hunt, too. I'm just saying.
Well, that happens immediately after the Twister passes, is of course, because... You know, fuck Jamie Gertz and whatever she's doing in this movie.
Yeah.
You know, she leaves Bill Paxton back at the drive-in, and that's the end of that whole thing. And they're just sitting there. And again, there's so much bickering in this movie. It's like, you know, you guys aren't, you know, fucking Romancing the Stone, okay?
No,
you're not even Jewel of the Nile, all right? You're Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt. You're bickering over who's going to do the research and who's going to do the paperwork and all this shit.
You're a broken relationship that can't get fixed.
You want to see the plot of Twister 2? It starts with her finally fucking signing the divorce papers because this shit is not going to work out. That's when the Dust Man fucking settles in.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he moves right in.
As soon as the ink is dry.
Hey, you want to make some mistakes?
What? Here's a question. If there was a sequel and they changed location, a la Jaws the Revenge.
Yeah.
Where else could this movie take place?
Nebraska?
Yeah.
But, like, other than, like, Yeah, I guess any other state in that area.
Well, maybe it's a thing where like they go to a like some sort of desert country like over in Asia or something like that.
The
and then there's like
sandstorms.
Yeah, that's totally. The answer. Yep.
Here's a question I was thinking about the sequels. All right. 1996 is Twister for, and then like 97 is Philip Seymour Hoffman doing Boogie Nights, and from then on out, it's the sky's the limit for his career.
Yeah.
At what point and how much money would he have to come back for the Dustman? Like, let's say it's 1999. How big is that paycheck for Philip Seymour Hoffman to say yes to putting the red hat back on?
I mean, 99.
Or even, all right, let's say.
I don't think he'd even garnered, I mean, because his, was Capote his first nomination as well as his first win?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
That's after.
Oh, that's well, I mean, that's well after. That's
I think he might have
mid-2000s.
Been nominated for Owning Mahoney for some reason, unless I'm mistaken.
Oof, that's a fucking hard movie to sit through. Yeah.
But even still, but I mean, like, he's got a legitimate career now. Obviously, Twister is for the money, like, and he's kind of retired doing those, like, crazy fat guy roles, and now someone's like, you know, here, fat guy, you know, we want you to dance one more time. I don't think he would do it for
nothing. No, I think
for nothing.
It's a thing where they just hired Jack Black.
Yeah.
And my Uncle Dusty always used to say, and that's just where you leave it.
Rusty.
Jack Black owes his first three paychecks to Hoffman in this movie.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah, because it was a total, like, well, he's turned out to be a really excellent theater actor who's now breaking into cinema. He's not going to do this anymore. Here, come be in High Fidelity.
Do you think Saving Silverman passed the desk of Philip Seymour Hoffman and he said, nope?
At that point, probably for Saving Silverman, it was probably like, are you fucking serious? That was like early 2000s, movie. And that's the end of the movie, by the way. They are left making out, and there's the movie, of course, has to end with woohooing. There's so much woohooing. Someone's playing rock, paper, scissor. The old lady's dog becomes like an honorary member of the Storm Chasers, like it has a choice because its house blew away.
And Dusty's like, all right, time for some Clapton. And he hits it. And it's like, oh, pizza man, huh? Oh, no.
Not again.
I was just wondering, why do you call Billy the extreme?
Because Billy is the extreme.
Bill's the most out of control son of a bitch in the game.
All right. Would anybody recommend this movie?
I'm gonna recommend this movie. I think it's a little long. I mean, and really, I mean, like, I think it's a really watchable movie. Is the thing. At the end of the day, it's TBS. You're hungover. It's Sunday. Yep. Sit down and Twister's on. Just watch it. It'll get you there. It'll get you to 5 o'clock, and then you can finally take a shower. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
It's that kind of a movie for me. It's not a good movie. It's not even a particularly enjoyable movie, but it's that kind of movie for me.
It's definitely the hungover. I just need to feel like a human being again. Just turn off the lights for the duration of the film, and then this will kind of bring me back until I have the strength to get a Gatorade movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But other than that, it's only enjoyable now because I feel like I was such a fool for liking it.
Yeah.
So now you watch it and you're like, oh my God, America just was out of, like, you know, stood up and cheered for this movie.
Oh, yeah. Make no bones about it. I also really liked this movie when it came out and thought it was a good, good movie.
Yeah. No, I mean, I hadn't seen the movie since I saw it in theaters, and then I think I rented it a couple of times. That was back in the day when you rented movies more than once.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I mean, yeah, like now looking back on it, yeah, it's not that you need to be drinking with buddies and making fun of it, because it's really not that movie.
No.
You need to have already drank with buddies the night before and made fun of another movie, maybe The Haunting, and then you came to this Jan de Balm project, and yes, you're feeling like grim death, and this is the only thing that, like, the noises and the sound effects are so loud when the storms come through, it's the only thing that, like, sort of jostles your consciousness, and you're like, oh yeah, okay, I'm still a living, breathing person.
And then at 8 p.m. that night, when you're feeling really good and you had a good meal, a good sandwich, you can watch Speed and actually really enjoy it.
Yeah, totally. And then if maybe this whole thing happened like Friday into Saturday, and then Saturday you just start drinking again.
Mm-hmm.
The next morning, you can kind of do the same thing with Speed too, because that's wretched, but it's also watchable because it's dumb action.
Yeah.
All right, I think that's going to put a cap on Twister. If you want to get a hold of us, any and all information can be found on whmpodcast.com. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, write into the WHM mailbag, wealllhatemovies@gmail.com. Check us out on YouTube. The WHM videos are popping up left and right. Also, check us out on Tumblr. We have the Tumblr page on there. And be sure to hit up crack.com for Private Cabin's Batman-related video, and all other Private Cabin videos can be found on Funny or Die. So until next time, I'm Andrew Jupin,
Steven Zadak,
and just in case,
take it easy.